The visitation room was long and narrow and split down the center with thick sheets of plexiglass that were divided by partitions to allow some measure of privacy. All conversations were by phone through a window. No touching whatsoever. Ronnie eventually showed up. No one was in a hurry at the prison. He looked healthy, maybe even a bit chubby, but then his weight had always gone up and down dramatically. He thanked her for coming, said he was surviving okay but needed money. The food was awful, and he wanted to buy something to eat at the canteen. He also was desperate for a guitar, and some books and magazines, and a small television, which could be purchased through the canteen. "Get me out of here, Annette," he pleaded over and over. "I didn't kill Debbie Carter, and you know it." She had never wavered in her belief that he was innocent, though some family members now had doubts. She and her husband, Marlon, were both working and raising a family and trying to save a little. Money was tight. What was she supposed to do? The state-funded indigent lawyers were getting themselves organized for his appeals. "Sell your house and hire a big lawyer," he said. "Sell everything. Do anything. Just get me out." The conversation was tense, and there were tears. Another inmate arrived for a visit in the booth next to Ronnie. Annette could barely see him through the glass, but she was intrigued by who he was and whom he had killed. "Roger Dale Stafford," Ronnie told her, "the famous steakhouse murderer. He had 9 death sentences, the current record on the row. He executed 6 people, including 5 teenagers, in the rear of a steakhouse in Oklahoma City in a bungled robbery, then murdered a family of 3. "They're all killers," Ronnie kept saying, "and all they talk about is killing. It's everywhere on the row. Get me out!" "Did he feel safe?" she asked. "Hell no, not living with a bunch of killers." He had always believed in the death penalty, but now he was a diehard supporter of it. He kept such opinions quiet, though, in his new neighborhood. There were no time limits on the visits. They eventually said goodbye with sincere promises to write and call. Annette was emotionally drained when she left McAllister. The calls started immediately. On the row, they put a phone on a cart and rolled it to the cells. A guard punched the numbers, then handed the receiver through the cell door. Since all calls were collect, the guards really didn't care how often they were made. Out of boredom and desperation, Ron was soon yelling for the cart more than anyone else. He usually began by demanding money, $20 or $30, so he could eat and buy cigarettes. Annette and Renee each tried to send $40 a month, but they had their own expenses and little extra money. They never sent enough, and Ronnie reminded them of this over and over. He was often angry, claiming that they didn't love him or they would get him out. He was innocent, everybody knew it, and there was no one on the outside to free him but his sisters. The calls were rarely pleasant, though they tried not to fight with him. Ron usually managed at some point to remind his sisters how much he loved them. Annette's husband sent subscriptions to National Geographic and the Ada Evening News. Ronnie wanted to monitor things back home. Not long after his arrival at McAllister, he heard for the first time about the bizarre confession of Ricky Joe Simmons. Barney knew about the taped confession, but chose not to use it at trial and didn't tell his client. An investigator with the Indigent Defense System took the video of the confession to McAllister and showed it to Ron. He went ballistic. "Someone else admitted killing Debbie Carter, and the jury never knew about it?" Surely this news would soon break in Ada, and he wanted to read about it in the local paper. Ricky Joe Simmons became another obsession, perhaps the principal one, and Ron would fixate on him for many years. Ron tried to call everybody. He wanted the world to know about Ricky Joe Simmons. His confession was Ron's ticket out, and he wanted someone to step forward and bring the boy to trial. He called Barney, other lawyers, county officials, even old friends, but most refused to accept the collect charges. Rules were changed and phone privileges were restricted after a couple of death row inmates were caught making calls to the families of their victims, just for the sport of it. On the average, 2 calls per week were allowed, and every phone number had to be pre-approved.